This is the Paula Gordon Show. I am Paula. Bill Russell, of course, is here. We are with Gerald Renner and Jason Berry, who together have written a book called Vows of Silence, The Abuse of Power in the Papacy of John Paul II. Jerry Renner, I interrupted you. Please continue.
I was just going to point out that there's no corrective balances in the Catholic Church. Cardinal Law of Boston was finally forced to resign, not by the Vatican, but by his constituents. They were so shocked, and particularly when 58 courageous priests of the archdiocese signed a statement saying they lost confidence in the cardinal. But there are other bishops out there who, if they had any integrity, would resign as well. I think the basic problem going back to the Middle Ages is the church is built on this medieval structure, and a bishop has one constituent, and that's the Pope.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. There's no other corrective balance, except in this country. There is the media, and there's the lawyers. They finally forced this into the open.
Which in a way really makes the leadership role of the hierarchy in America quite unusual, doesn't it?
Well, that's true, Paula. I think what the church desperately needs is some form of separation of powers. I would never want to see the Catholic Church become a pure democracy.
I don't think there's much threat of that, is there?
Not only is there not much threat of it, I use the term pure with a certain edge of irony in my voice, but thank you. In a democracy, the court system stands separate from the legislative branch and the executive branch. The code of canon law, which is the church's legal system, is such that the Pope, whoever is Pope, can intervene in any legal proceeding at any time and halt it, which means that justice is sort of, in an ultimate sense, in one man's hands, and that's not healthy. That's not to say that
The person might be.
Well, exactly. And, you know, in the case of Father Maciel, the head of the Legion of Christ, he is in Rome with standing accusations by 9 men from their seminary years. The religious order that he founded, the Legion of Christ, is starting schools and has started schools in the United States and other countries. Came out of Mexico in the 1940s. Children who go to the Legion schools are taught essentially to venerate Father Maciel. They are taught that he is a living saint. I would dispute that heatedly. I think any man who is accused of pedophilia so widely as Maciel should certainly not be held up to this kind of high respect. And yet, people have children in schools, and I don't think really understand the history behind this man and his movement. If there were a separation of powers in the church, if there were an independent mechanism, and we're starting to see the beginnings of this with these lay review boards in different dioceses, then there would be a way to force the resignation of a bishop if his governance was so out of line. There would be a way, for example, with this kind of mechanism to go into places where a group like the Legion is functioning and at least force them into some sort of public dialogue.
I found as I read Vows of Silence, and this is always kind of a good mark for me, it made me really uncomfortable lots of times in lots of ways as I was learning things. And I went in thinking, well, I know something about the Catholic Church, and well, yeah, I follow headlines. But you were really in a serious way looking at all kinds of challenges within the church with this particular focus on child abuse, both male and female children. Didn't that wear on the two of you?
I think so. I mean, I've been a journalist, you know, for all my life. And but I'm not a Catholic, brought up a Catholic, went through 16 years of Catholic schools. But as a journalist, I looked at it as a journalist. And it certainly affected my family and my children I had in Catholic schools and so forth. But there was no hesitancy about reporting this as a journalist should. It just came naturally. I never.
Well, it does make it quite a stronger case that you are on the inside.
Yeah.
But it also, I would think, would leave you prey to people saying you're airing dirty laundry. We've seen the headlines. We don't want to hear this. The church is just fine.
Well, yeah, that's a common attitude.
Yeah, but I think especially since the media coverage of 2002 and the Boston Globe reporting that ignited a kind of chain reaction, that people don't tend to view journalists as, you know, the messenger who should be attacked because of the message. That was certainly the case, I should say, in Louisiana in the mid-'80s when I began this reporting and wrote my first book on this topic. But I think what is more important, and I think the rank-and-file members of the Catholic Church feel this way, is that the truth come out, is that we understand what is going on inside the church so that we can change it.
You quote, I think it was a canon lawyer, attorney, representing this group of men. I think I've got this right. And at some point she said, better that these eight men should be wronged than that thousands of people should lose their faith. And that seems to be at the core of, you know, and that's one of the major issues.
That's right.
Isn't that troubling?
That has to be dealt with.
And was she not speaking for the church in saying that?
I believe so. That was a very loyal canon lawyer, a woman
who was in Rome,
who had to be approved by the Vatican before she could handle a case like this.
But she was effectively speaking to her clients, wasn't she?
That's right. She was the one who was steering the
She was the one that represented them.
Yeah, and it was further undergirded by a Mexican bishop who was in Rome and asked Cardinal Ratzinger, the top theologian in the Catholic Church, a very powerful man, and Cardinal Ratzinger reportedly told him that Father Maciel has brought many, many good men into the priesthood, as if this were a reward. We won't look at the charges of pedophilia because other people will lose their faith.
Again, this was very troubling. This father, this cardinal, who is the chief theologian for the Catholic Church, Ratzinger, do I pronounce
that's
it right?
That's right. Yes. Well, the Inquisition.
He's the head of what used to be the Inquisition.
That's right.
That stopped me cold.
I thought we quit doing that, and we changed the name.
And this function continues within the church in what seems to me an incredibly anachronistic function, and yet nobody's shy about saying that's what it is. They changed the name over the door. It's the same.
The history.
It's still going on. But those who are suffering are these, in this case, the innocents who are being abused. What's wrong with this picture that the Inquisition is still alive and well?
Well, I think in fairness to the church, as shocking as these things are, and certainly, I mean, I would be less than honest if I didn't say that after the shock, as a writer, I thought, this is incredible. This material was so rich. The layers of secrecy were just oozing with contradictions, and the coating of ironies that we found and so slowly peeled away, almost as you would, the layers of an onion. It's the most amazing story I've ever covered as a writer, as a journalist. But all that said, I think we find the psychodynamics of secrecy in many power structures. If you look at what is going on in the Bush administration right now with this constant pressure being put on them about the rationale behind the invasion of Iraq. Were there weapons of mass destruction? Well, you know, even Hans Blix, the man who was in charge of the nuclear, the inspections of those sites, is now coming out with a book saying that they didn't level with us. And I'm not just singling out the Bush administration. You could look at Nixon and Watergate. You could certainly look at the French Revolution. There are many examples historically.
Well, and it's not just in politics. You can find it in any place there is power. You can find it in corporations. The abuse of power is a lot of what you're talking about.
And organized sports, to say the least. Yeah.
So the subject really in this case is power, and it happens that you have dug deep into the Catholic Church in looking at ways that that power can be abused.
Yes. Lord Acton said famously, power corrupts absolute power. Power corrupts absolutely, and let us remember he was a Catholic.
And he was speaking of the Pope.
Yes.
And the drive to make the Pope infallible in 1870.
In 1870, yet again.
One of those many things
Vatican
that I learned.
Vatican I. Yes, yeah. Vatican I. And I guess I knew that somewhere. But to remember that the Pope only started being infallible when there was a vote after everybody else went home.
And a very divided vote.
Very
divided.
Yeah, but I think the theologians will argue that he's always been infallible. It was just a matter of defining it.
Well, all the same.
Infallibly.
There's a circularity to that.
I think so.
But some of this is interesting to me as one thinks about things that we just take for granted. And if we don't go back and look at the context, the history, the where did this come from, papal infallibility goes all the way back to 1870, which was Vatican I.
Yes.
When then you reminded me that Vatican II, with Pope John the 23rd, who's had to get in line to be a saint because there were politics going on, as you report, that these things are all, I mean, that's within living memory, and still we've forgotten some of that. Well, I've talked too much. Let us go to a break. I am Paula Gordon. Bill Russell's here looking at me saying, stop that, Paula! We are delighted to have Gerald Renner and Jason Berry with us.
Whom we will let talk
We will in a moment when we return. Please be with us.